Hello and welcome to the eighth of a 10-program series on tension in modern living, produced in cooperation with the Institute of Medicine of Chicago and the University of Chicago Pritzker School of Medicine. Our program today deals with student activism, which certainly has been the cause of many new tensions in our society. I'm Robert Critt of the Chicago Medical School, and I have the pleasure of being your host. Our panelists today are Dr. Frederick Sten, who is chairman of the Public Information Committee of the Institute of Medicine of Chicago, and from the University of Chicago, Dr. N. Brewster Smith, professor and chairman of the Department of Psychology, and Dr. Robert L. Kahn, associate professor of psychiatry and human development. Dr. Smith, I'd like to direct my first question to you. In your opinion, do you feel that most student activists are earnest in their demonstrations? Do you feel that they're honestly concerned about what they feel to be serious problems that affect their education?
That's a large question. I think earnestness is one of the least things that I would be doubtful of. They're all earnest. They're very earnest. They vary, of course. I think that to say that all activists are one particular kind of young person would be keeping things too simple. There are some who are political leaders who are really questioning the whole order of modern life. There are others who are much concerned about what they think are inequities and relics of older paternalistic ways of doing things on the campuses, who are quite different. So I'd want to not say that everything is true about student activists as a total group.
Dr. Kahn, do you have anything to add on that?
No, I just emphasize that point, that their earnestness and their seriousness has been one of the very special qualities that has been found to characterize the group of student activists.
And all the more reason, Bob, that we need to pay due attention to this movement. It's a serious movement, it's genuine, and the population needs to pay attention to the developments in which is going over the world as well as our country.
Yes.
When I was out in Berkeley before I came here to Chicago, I made some studies of the first group that really attracted national attention, the so-called free speech movement at Berkeley back in 64. And one of the things which we found about these young people when we compared them with other comparable students on campus was that they were very much more morally concerned. They are much more concerned with matters of principle, with some kind of very deep sort of morality than the ordinary run-of-the-mill students. Now, that doesn't mean they can't be a darn nuisance.
Yes.
But I think that their concern, their morality, their idealism, even when it leads to outrageousness, is a very positive thing.
Have your studies indicated any information that would describe generally the kinds of social background these people come from?
Our studies and those of others that I know about tend to show that they come from more than average well-to-do families. The parents are frequently highly educated, professional. They're certainly not the dregs of society. They're not the kooks or from bottom drawer of society. They're mainly the children of families who are making it in the world.
Mm-hmm. What's their intellectual caliber?
All the studies that I've seen have shown that these were above average students. They're more interested in intellectual and humanistic values. They do tend to come from the humanities and liberal arts rather than the hard sciences and engineering scientific fields.
I don't know whether you, Dr. Smith, or Dr. Kahn, as a psychiatrist, would want to answer this, but why do these students seem so angry? Why do they use physical means in their demonstrations? Which of you gentlemen would like to comment on that?
Well, I think the use of physical means of demonstrating perhaps has been especially part of the scene since the time of the civil rights demonstrations. And since that time, the use of violence or physical acts in demonstrating has been more prominent. I think that also part of it is the sense of frustration that they feel.
You think these are then really outlets that they are naturally employing?
I think they are angry, and I think for some reason which I rather regret, but I try to understand. They want to be outrageous. They feel that there is a great deal of hypocrisy and fraud in ordinary social amenities. They feel the way to break through that towards some more fundamental human honesty is to be outrageous, to use the four-letter words, to go unshaven. I think their point is something positive. The way in which they express it, as somebody past 30, I get a little sad about.
You say that they feel they should be outrageous. Do you mean that perhaps they have chosen to act outrageous and they really don't feel the anger that they seem to project?
Well, I don't think it's a put-on. I think they're really, really angry. But I think these are young people that have been reared by parents who are in some way or other doing well in established society. They're mainly parents of relatively liberal political values. And these young people have somehow or other come to feel that they have the responsibility of standing up for the values which they feel their parents have sold out on.
Mm-hmm.
And one way of making their point is to try to shock people, try to shock them into some posture of greater human honesty.
Do you think, Dr. Smith, the students being well aware of the values placed upon material things plays a role here, and with damage done to things is a means of bringing attention of society to their philosophic ends? Yes?
It could be. Of course, the amount of violence and damage, it seems to me, is still a fairly small thing. This has happened. It's happened in rather outrageous ways. But I think the main thrust has been toward shouting the four-letter words and behaving in ways which shock people without doing a great deal of physical damage or without breaking many heads. There is the attempt, of course, always to provoke the bringing in of police so that the heads will be broken the other way, and this will serve a way of bringing a lot of other students who previously were unconcerned into the action.
Does it appear to you, or have your studies indicated, that these extreme actions are taken really as a first resort, or do they generally go through the normal channels first?
Well, the great complaint of liberally oriented adult faculty members has always been that the students have not exhausted all the channels. And I think the answer to that question really depends very much on where you sit. Typically, in the cases that I think I know about, the channels haven't been fully exhausted. And yet also, I think a case could be made that the normal process of things on the campuses before this kind of active protest came on, by and large, was terribly slow, terribly conservative, and not terribly satisfying to the urgent demands of this group of young people. So that, they have not exhausted all recourses, and yet I think they feel that the ordinary channels would not produce effects.
I'd like to ask you and Dr. Kahn both, and I don't mean to extract a University of Chicago position from either of you, but what is the impact of student demonstrations on campus generally, looking at the scene nationally?
Well, I think, to some extent, on our campus, there has been a tremendous amount of faculty-student interaction and really examining some of the critical issues about the curriculum, about the relation of students to faculty in terms of aspects such as appointments, matters of discipline. And the communication, while we feel it always has been there, the students have felt, and that it was never sufficient as much as it could be. And certainly, since the protests have started, there has been a tremendous increase, much of which I think will have productive and constructive consequences.
Mm-hmm. I can't give you an official Chicago reaction, but I can give you a personal reaction as a relative new member of the Chicago faculty. I certainly wouldn't want to put myself in the position of condoning or approving of the forcible sit-ins in our administration building. Yet, when I look at what's been happening on campus since this all began, I can see some changes afoot, which I think are very good changes, of just the sort that Dr. Kahn mentioned, that sleepy departments, which had not previously had very much interchange going on between students and faculty, are now engaged in a very intensive period of what you can only call compensatory communication. Mm-hmm. They talk, but the need for it is extreme, and I think the aftermath is going to be good.
That's a special strength that the students have in our country and elsewhere, the feeling that they can express themselves. Has something done about the expression of these ideas? And that's an achievement, is it not, compared to the way it had been in previous years?
Well, of course, I think the students will be very critical now if the talk is not followed by some changes in the actual relationships between students and faculty. I think our universities generally, in this country, this would not be so true in Europe, are very paternalistically organized institutions, and that if we're concerned with their educational impact, we have to recognize that people learn best when they're also being listened to. And so I think faculties have to develop more skill in listening to students as well as in talking to them. And we're getting some lessons in that now.
I won't ask you whether these ends could have been achieved by going through normal channels, because I think obviously this is something that no one can
obviously
judge.
One can't, but I think that some of the reactions of a substantial segment of the faculty is that perhaps a lot of the excesses of the demonstrating were unnecessary.
Yes.
In other words, that there had been protests, there was action being taken, and that perhaps, if anything, things may have been diverted by some of the excesses of the demonstrating.
What has been the effect of these demonstrations on campus as far as the reactions of other students, the non-demonstrators?
They vacillate. I think there is a quite substantial group, and whether it's, I think it's still a minority, but a very large minority, who are prepared to feel that the demonstrators are in some sense speaking for them. They're taking risks and doing things which they themselves would not be ready to do, but they are sympathetic and ready to stand back at them. There are, of course, still large numbers of relatively unconcerned students who are going their own way, much as students always have. And then there is a minority of students who are quite upset by all this and who feel that this is a bad thing, that the campus is being subverted, the proper educational goals are being left aside. But I think, at least on the campuses that I've known well, there is a very substantial amount of student sympathy of a relatively passive sort, ready to be mobilized in case the administration seemed to be taking too stern a role toward the demonstrators.
Do you get impression, Dr. Smith, that these students may have a broad, unexpressed philosophic conception of being concerned with the need for a greater spiritual emphasis? A more emphasis on idealism in contrast to the great emphasis of the past on materialism. Is that playing a role here?
That certainly is playing a role. We asked the activist group in our study out at in the Bay Area, both at Berkeley and San Francisco State, by a fairly complicated way, to describe how they would ideally like to be as persons. And then we compared what made the activists different in this respect from the run-of-the-mill students. And you got from the activists much more often things like idealistic, sincere, creative, spontaneous, loving, not hung up, this sort of thing, whereas from the other students you got the more conventional values of ambitious, plans ahead, foresightful, orderly, self-disciplined, what the sociologists, I believe, call the Protestant ethic, but there's nothing particularly Protestant about it. It's the traditional middle-class way of being oriented toward success in life. And I think many of these activist youngsters feel that there's something corrupt about success in the modern world, and they're groping for new social
patterns.
It's
a different definition of success.
Yes, yes.
A spiritual success.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I hope I asked this in the right way. In your opinion or in your studies, do you find that a large number of demonstrators really were youngsters who were not especially interested in demonstrating, but We're attracted by the glamour and excitement of a movement that, and again, forgive me if I sound mundane, give some an opportunity simply to have some excitement and not go to class and do things that give them notoriety. Is there credence to this point of view?
I don't have hard data on that, but I would certainly, from a common sense standpoint, be sure that there are a large number of people that come in where the action is, and if the action in former days was panty raids, that's where they are. If it's now protest, they're there. I don't think this is a major explanation. I think this sort of adds resonance to and provides buildup for something that really is caused in other ways.
Let me ask, therefore, whether in view of the psychological or psychiatric ramifications of this problem, do you feel that colleges and universities should be better prepared generally to deal with the problem of youth?
That's what they...
Obviously, this is catching everyone unawares when these things crop up.
I think many colleges and administrators are certainly concerned about these things. But I don't think there's anybody who feels they have sufficient wisdom at this point, perhaps, to have the way. I think one can look over the country and see that there have been different methods in dealing with the students, and some seem to be more effective, perhaps, than others, depending upon what your mm-hmm. criteria are.
I think, while we don't know the answers, I have some feeling as to what the problem is, and the problem is sort of a twofold one. On the one hand, how faculty and administrations can really be grown up and assert their necessary authority, not be kids right along with all the students, not simply give in and go native with the demonstrators themselves, but stand up for what they think are intrinsically important educational values. That on the one hand, while at the same time, how to build in ways of getting more input from the students, more participation on their part in something which, after all, is a very deep concern to the students, namely how their education is going to be managed. And I think doing those two things is awfully, awfully hard, because if one simply accedes to the demands of the protesters, frequently this involves really abdicating the responsibilities of faculty and administration. Mm-hmm. But if you simply go law and order and bring in the cops and so on, you're missing the opportunity to really capture a whole new orientation to what education can be about.
Well, do you feel that students should have greater participation in the planning of curriculum and faculty appointments and so forth?
Yes, I think I'd answer just that simply, yes.
Do you feel that way? I'm not taking a vote here, I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the students have the ability to do this intelligently, constructively?
Well, I think the answer has to be...
This is, again, not a leading question, I don't know.
I'm sure that any answer has to be broken down in terms of the level of sophistication of the students and the kind of participation. I think when you're dealing with advanced graduate students, they frequently have as much insight into the requirements of curricula in their special area as, say, members of a department faculty who are outside their particular specialty. So I think they can contribute in a very constructive way. When one's dealing with undergraduates, they can certainly contribute to the discussion with reminding the faculty of concerns that are very much alive to them that the faculty may have forgotten about, but I would feel they probably couldn't play too much of a part in final decision. But I sure think they ought to be heard.
Dr. Kahn, drawing on your psychiatric knowledge, if you were in a situation where there was, in a sense, a broad student involvement in judging you as a faculty person, would you feel as free and open in your teaching, knowing that you are, in a sense, being judged? And
Well, certainly it raises the problem of faculty becoming so concerned about winning the approval of the students that becomes their primary motivation. But I think there is a mature area of interaction between student and faculty where the student's point of view are quite legitimate, and that I would hope I would be the kind of person who would be able to react constructively to the comments of the students.
We're all being judged anyhow, and the things that are being said behind our backs may be very uncomplimentary. and they may create barriers to any kind of educational flow between student and teacher. I think if this inherent constant evaluation process gets brought up to the surface, we can learn to live with it, and it may make for a considerably better educational atmosphere.
Do you think curriculum is something that students can evaluate and be constructively critical of?
Well, the interesting thing is that for many years, good departments have incorporated students, certainly in the discussions of curriculum, and have felt it was absolutely necessary.
You're speaking of graduate students or undergrads as well?
Well, I'm talking about my own experience in terms of graduate students. I think that perhaps more departments are actually seeing this as as a part of their operation, but it's simply being more made more explicit at this time than it has been in the past.
But aren't most of the students undergraduates, generally?
In the country, yes.
Yes.
I think there is some real conflict of interest which ought to be faced and talked through. I think a lot of the students now, and particularly the activist students, want something that you might call instant relevance, like instant coffee or anything of the sort. Drop some instant relevance in the curriculum and that curriculum becomes relevant. It may, however, become less useful in the long run if one neglects some of the hard work, the spinach aspects of it, of learning competence in fundamentals. And I think the students are capable of recognizing that if one thrashes it through with them. I think we do need to achieve relevance in the sense that teaching connects with what the students are currently vividly concerned with, but I certainly would very much oppose faculty simply riding with what students think is what they need. They may not know all the things that they need, and this is what the dialogue ought to be about.
But much of this role, too, is related to other things and not be related to the subjects they're being taught, but just a discontent with the directions in which society is going that has broader implications than just what is going on within the school environment.
Is that, by the way, a vital factor in the student dissatisfaction?
Well, I think so. I think that the entire campus climate in this country will probably shift not too long after the Vietnam War is over and after the draft ceases to be the kind of threat than it is. But, of course, we know that there have been even more violent upsets on the campuses of Europe where Vietnam is not at least the same thing as it is for us. So I don't think we can write the whole thing off as simply Vietnam or even American urban problems, which are another major cause of concern.
What are some of the other considerations that you find in studying these demonstrations? We've talked about curriculum, faculty appointment, the fate of the world.
I think relations with authority. I think we're in a rapidly changing situation, which is part of a transition from, in our country, the Victorian pattern of parents being the final word and impertinence and insolence being the major sins that children could commit, through a generation of parents who had broken away from the Victorian grandparents but weren't terribly sure about how to exert legitimate authority in their own households. A good deal of vacillation, a good deal of unsureness, some democracy, some permissiveness, a good deal of confusion. And now we have a generation of young people who have had this kind of rather uncertain model from their own parents as to how they ought to relate to adult authority. And I see this as being a major thing through the American and European protests, trying to discover different ways in which people can relate to one another that don't have the mark of here is the big authority and here is the person who is subservient to that authority, and yet which produce respect and social order. I think we're still groping.
I think perhaps there are really two divisions of the problem. One is the intellectual problems and how to deal with the material that comes out of these demonstrations. The other is the problem of the person, the psychological makeup of the individual involved in these demonstrations. I'm wondering what you gentlemen would suggest generally as some possible remedial approaches to this problem, if there are any in your opinion. Where is this thing headed?
Are you talking about parents of young people now, or are you talking about college administrators and faculties?
Dealing, what could the university community do to, I won't use the word tranquilize, but try to get this thing into some stage of resolution?
I think one thing that the university world has notably not done, and that is get the leap upon the activists. Begin to introduce some of the things that the activist students are concerned about before they have a gun at their heads. Because just as with the urban riots, I think so on the campuses, what appears to be the real truth is that the way you get consequences is by starting trouble. It's rewarded. Now, if faculties and administrations can begin to open things up, get communication flowing, before they are rewarding some bad behavior by doing this, I think this would be a very constructive thing.
In the same way, too, Dr. Smith.
Excuse me, Dr. Sten, I have to interrupt because our time, unfortunately, is coming to a close, and I do want to express appreciation to each of you gentlemen for sharing your knowledge so freely and for casting what I think is some real constructive light on this critical problem that the country faces. We've been talking with Dr. Frederick Sten, who is chairman of the Public Information Committee of the Institute of Medicine of Chicago, Dr. Robert Kahn, associate professor of psychiatry and the Committee on Human Development at the U of C, and Dr. Brewster Smith, professor and chairman of the Department of Psychology, also at the University of Chicago. Our next program will deal with the problems of middle age and aging. We hope you'll be watching. This is Tension in Modern Living. I'm Robert Tritt.